You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. It is 6:06. You are listening to the Civic Media Network. I am Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Jamie, I'm very excited today for the show. I'm wearing a new gift. Ooh. I got a brand new pair of black floor shimes yesterday. They are about two sizes too big, but I have an apple in them, so I have breakfast Ooh. And footwear all in the same thing. It's very, it's a happy,
it's very
happy
exciting.
Thursday.
And you look like you're yes. wearing your dad's shoes. It's fine.
I do. My dad had a size 17, according to this gift giver, and I can't, you know... I can't really take them back or tell them I can't wear them, so I'm just going to slide around.
Well, that would be insulting. We wouldn't want to hurt anybody's feelings by telling them that you can't wear the shoes.
That would be silly. So now I have slip and slides on my feet, and I'm sure it's going to be terrific.
It'll
be a great day.
At least we sit a lot in this job, so you don't actually have to try to walk in them.
That's true. That is true. So welcome. We've got another jam-packed show, a lot to get to, as always. So why don't we start with some headlines from Iran. This is the latest coming out of there overnight. Iran has ramped up retaliatory attacks on energy supplies with strikes on two foreign oil tankers in Iraqi waters. The UK's maritime agency said another vessel in the Persian Gulf was struck, the sixth in the last 2 days.
I don't know about you, but this doesn't feel like things are ramping down like this administration keeps trying to tell us.
That's because he hasn't decided to end the
meeting. Oh, that's right. It's all on his word. I understand. We'll talk about that later this morning. So also in news headlines, oil climbed above $100 overnight. That jump came despite the International Energy Agency agreeing to release a record 400 million barrels of oil from reserves into the global market.
Well, we talked about this last week. That's fine in the very short term, but the amount of oil needed every day, that's just a drop in the bucket. So it's and it goes then to deplete your emergency reserve. So it's not really going to help, which is...
It's like a dog chasing its tail at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, you're never going to catch up. You're going to end up in this never-ending cycle is essentially what's going to happen over the next few weeks, especially with the oil.
Well, the good news is, Jamie, that President Trump has been repeating his claim that the U.S. has won the war, even as the conflict widens. Quote, "It's just a question of when. When do we stop?" he said.
This isn't going to be like one of those other moves that this administration has made where they go in, they create chaos, then they say, oh, we're done, and then they just leave it to everybody else to figure out, is it?
Right. This one's, well, it can't. It's too far down the road. We're pot committed. We joined in with Israel. We've started this war. All of these countries are affected. The whole world's economy is being affected. So, I mean, he could say we're done all he wants, but until he can't say in one sentence we're done and then we're going to keep attacking, we're going to go deeper, we're going to decide what's going on. It doesn't work that way.
No.
But in his mind, it does.
Hopefully we have people at the helm, though, who understand how this works. I would love to say we do. I would love to be more definitive in that answer, and I cannot be. I cannot
all
be.
Right. Fair enough.
All I have is a little hope, a glimmer even. Also in news headlines, at least 10 security defenders were killed in Israeli drone strikes against the Israeli Royal Guard checkpoints in Tehran. That's according to Iran's satellite-affiliated Fars News Agency. State-affiliated. There we go.
That's okay. If satellites are just sending us messages, that's another headline. We are getting messages from space. Kuwait's international airport was hit by several drones on Thursday morning, leading to material damage, the country's civil aviation authority said. And we are getting more details, and we're going to get into this story in depth. We're getting more details about the deadly bombing at the beginning of this whole thing, on the first day of the Iranian elementary school. You know that 165 people were killed in that attack, many of them children. It was one of the deadliest civilian casualty events linked to U.S. military action in the last two decades, if it is confirmed, and it seems to have been confirmed. But this is, Jamie, the reason that we're looking into this more today is because there's some outdated intelligence.
Yeah.
Which is when you put people who are not experienced in charge, bad things happen.
Absolutely. And now investigators are saying that U.S. Central Command relied on old targeting coordinates that had been provided by the Defense Intelligence Agency. So the school was actually located near the Iranian Revolutionary Guard military base, which was most likely the target. However, international law generally prohibits strikes on civilian buildings, including schools, even if they're located near military sites. So these satellite images show the school had clear visual markers identifying it as a civilian facility, including bright murals and visible school structures. And online maps and public records clearly identified the building as an elementary school. Now, President Trump, as we know, has initially blamed Iran for the attack, later said that he was unsure who was responsible, and then he said he would accept the results of the Pentagon's investigation. Well, yesterday, reporters asked him just this question. Here's what he had to say. This is Cut One, please.
A new report says that the military investigation has found that the United States struck the school in Iran. As Commander-in-Chief, you take responsibility for that.
That is what?
As Commander-in-Chief, do you...
For what?
For the strike on the school in Iran. A new report says the military investigation has found it was the United States that struck the school.
I don't know about it.
I don't know about it.
I don't know about it. Never heard of it? Not keeping up with it? Did I tell you I parred hole three the other day? Oh, okay.
Well, because when that school was being attacked, that's exactly what he was doing. That's not hyperbole. He was actually on a golf course in the middle of that attack when that school was being was literally under siege in this conflict, this war, whatever.
After he was in his pillow fort down in Mar-a-Lago,
yep.
Impersonating a Situation Room. It's you don't have to. See, here's the thing. We don't have to make these things up about him. He does it himself. It sounds like we're making it up because most rational people go, that can't be true. Oh, well, it is. There was the sound right there. He hasn't heard about it, which doesn't, I actually believe him. I'm sure they come in, Mr. President, we just got the new report. Listen, I don't want to hear about it. It was probably Iran. If it wasn't Iran, I'm not going to say. So don't tell me. The less I know, the better. That's how I've lived my whole life, knowing less.
Which is, you know, honestly, that's a dangerous way to live for any human being, let alone the president of the United States, let's be honest. But, I mean, this is a danger to aggressive military action without fully listening to intelligence experts, career officials. These people are trained to prevent mistakes like this. And in situations that you have basically perpetuated and started, this is going to move quickly, and so decisions are going to have to be quickly, and those decisions need to be guided by accurate information, some pretty careful analysis, and experienced voices inside government. And right now, we don't have those people at the helm of whatever this situation is or is going to be down the road.
And I don't know this for a fact. This is a hypothesis, but based on Hegseth's demeanor, I'm sure there was discussion. Do we need to plot out and get new intelligence on the maps? Do we need to reconfirm our targets so that we know? We've already done it, bro. We're going to crush it. Just go in and do it, and whatever happens, happens. And again, that's just given his attitude,
yes.
Given his
cavalier attitude, yeah.
Very cavalier attitude, and how he has just talked about the war so far like it's just a game. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody made that mention and it was vetoed somewhere in the chain of command. To just go, no, we already have a map, we already have targeting info, go with it.
And more than 45 Democratic senators at this point have actually demanded answers from the administration about what happened and whether U.S. military caused this attack. And obviously, it got a lot more attention after initial reporting revealed that the preliminary findings were that the U.S. may have been responsible for this strike, no matter what the president says. Lawmakers are also raising concerns that recent Pentagon staffing and budget cuts may have weakened some of these safeguards meant to prevent the civilian civilian casualties. Wow. Just like what we've been talking about over the last couple of days, if you've been listening to this program, it's weird when what happens when you lose those people in certain key parts of your administration, even if they don't think that, you know, you don't believe that they are aligned with your vision, your mission, whatever you think is happening, your agenda. These people are in their positions for a very good reason, and it's to prevent things like this.
It's a tragic event. I mean, there is the one way of thinking that, you know, every time we're in a war, there are mistakes made. The difference this time is not taking responsibility. It's not even an accident. Accident is the wrong term because it makes it seem so accidental.
Right.
We were bombing things. We hit the wrong target. We screwed up. That's the line you have to take.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we take responsibility. We deeply apologize. This was not our intent. Unfortunately, it happens in war. It is not, but you have to treat it with the gravity that it deserves. This was a horrible, horrible miscalculation on the United States' part, and to then brush it off because, God forbid, anything comes out that you made a mistake. We can never question dear leader or his minions about a mistake, and this was clearly the worst kind of mistake you can make, and we're just going to deny.
Now, critics are saying that there were several cuts to what's called the Civilian Protection Center of Excellence, and that was a Pentagon office created to reduce civilian harm during military operations. And the cuts to that agency may have reduced the oversight. And former officials say the office had been working on updating no-strike lists on civilian sites, but that work slowed or stopped after the staffing reductions. Thank you very much to the Doge operation, right? So when we start basically diminishing those voices, this is where you get these catastrophic mistakes. And you are going to continue to see those. And honestly, here's what I'm going to say. We're, 11, 12 days into this thing? I'm surprised we haven't...
Yeah, it'll be 2 weeks on Saturday.
I'm surprised we haven't heard more from things that the U.S. has accidentally or didn't know. And I fully expect there to be more of those stories coming out as this progresses because of the fact that this administration doesn't really understand what they're doing. They don't have the right people in place. And because of the cuts to offices, just like the Civilian Protection Center, right? Like, I fully expect there to be more of these stories to come out in the news headlines in the next few days, weeks, as this goes on.
Well, why would we fund and worry about civilians in other countries? We're bombing them. We don't need to worry about them.
Well, we're tough. Everything's good here at home. America first and all of that.
Jamie, we're crushing it. I don't know if you know that. We're crushing it. And by crushing I mean U.S. citizens trying to buy things.
Yeah.
Like gas and food and electricity and housing.
I mean, you know, and here's the other thing, too. When you look at where the U.S. is on the world stage, this is about our credibility. We have responsibility and we have moral standards to basically to everybody across the globe. That doesn't seem to matter right now.
No, we don't. We have. Please. We're here. We're in it for ourselves. Hey, when we come back, Dodge County Sheriff and DHS are denying holding a U.S. citizen, despite evidence to the contrary. It's Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. It is 6:19 right now, and you are listening to the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All facts, no fiction. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
6:22 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We do appreciate it, having a little weather talk in between segments here.
Yeah, we've got show some, within the show.
Got a little snow headed our way, it looks like, according to the maps. Much colder temperatures by Monday. Like 70 degrees, and then we're going to go down to less than, like, around 20 degrees by Monday, and then we spike right back up, it looks like, by the end of the week. So it's that fun time of the year.
Guys, coming in like a lion. Hopefully it does go out like a lamb this March.
It's like weather roulette this time of year.
I told you, yeah. Pardon me if you were in the show within a show. Yesterday, within I don't know, an hour and a half, I went from just cloudy, cold, and misty mm-hmm. to grapple to then full-on snow, then bright sunshine. It was like every season within an hour and a half. And
that's fun, though. Whiplash. Keeps you guessing.
I don't want to guess, Jamie. I got to know. Listen, there's enough uncertainty in the world right now. I want to look at my forecast at the beginning of the day and then move on with my day. I needed to bring every piece of outerwear I owned yesterday. I had boots, I had sandals, I had a sun hat, I had mukluks. It was unbelievable.
Well, you know, it was variety, though. It was variety, and you didn't get bored, that's for sure,
yesterday.
Well,
my life did not seem spicier after that day. Hey, this is very interesting. It's a big case of they said, she said. The federal immigration officials and the Dodge County Sheriff are denying that they held a U.S. citizen for more than 30 hours at O'Hare Airport, then released her onto the street in rural Wisconsin in the middle of the night. Now, that all despite her family providing evidence that her apparent location was inside detention centers. Yes, this story has been going on for a while, and it seems, boy, you hate to have mistrust in your government agencies, don't you, Jamie? But
well, do you trust this DHS to actually tell people the truth?
No. And it's going to come down to who do you believe?
Mm-hmm.
The government officials, which is Dodge County Sheriff and the immigration officials,
mm-hmm.
or do you trust big tech?
Right. Well,
And somebody's actual, you know, testimony.
There's that part of it, too. So family and friends of Summer Sundas, or Sunny Nakweve, is 28 years old. She was born in Evanston, Illinois. She provided this detailed account of what she says that extended an illegal and extended detention at O'Hare at led to the Broadview Immigration Facility in Illinois and then to the Dodge County Jail between March 5th and March 7th. Now, there's been no reason for her to be detained, according to her or the family and everybody involved in this particular case. Now, Sunny had just returned from this international work trip where she and five colleagues were detained at the airport. That's according to her family friend. His name is Kevin Morrison, and he is the Cook County Commissioner. And there was a news conference that was held on Sunday, Brian, and two of the colleagues are U.S. citizens and three are legal permanent residents, according to Morrison. Now, here is what Morrison had to say on Sunday describing part of Sunny's incident. This is cut two, please.
We had present here both Broadview and Cook County Sheriff's Police, who ICE directly lied to their faces, saying that no woman had ever been brought to this facility, nor had been detained. They lied throughout. I had been in communication with an immigration attorney who was in direct contact with someone at the U.S. Attorney General's office. They asked for Sunny's phone number so they could search the facility for her phone. About 10 minutes later, the phone opened, text messages were read, and the phone was turned off, and we lost her location. Around 20 minutes later, they allowed two Cook County Sheriff's Police entry to show them empty cells. It is our belief that it was during that time that they began moving the six individuals from Broadview to an immigration facility in Wisconsin.
Wow.
Now, for those of you who aren't familiar, Broadview is where, if you saw it on the news, Broadview is a facility that it has mm-hmm. and continues to have all sorts of protests. That was when ICE came to Chicago, they set it up in Broadview, which is southwest of the city. It's close to the city, but it's a nearby suburb, and that's where that's that detention center. So that's what they're talking about.
And where this gets even more interesting is that the Department of Homeland Security, as you alluded to, and the Dodge County Sheriff, Dale Schmidt, has said in public statements that were released earlier this week that Sonny's claims are absolutely false. Now, Sonny's sister, Sarah, said at the same news conference that jail officials also repeatedly denied that Sonny was in custody, even though her phone location appeared to have pinged from inside the buildings. This was Sarah on Sunday at the same conference. Cut three, please.
We kept being lied to our faces. We were told that she wasn't here. We saw her location on smack dab in the middle of the facility. We saw her location in Wisconsin in the middle of the facility. The cops were lying to our faces. They were saying, we were asking them, hey, her location is here. We were in contact with her, and they kept being like, I don't know what to tell you.
Wow.
We lost her. We don't know. She's gone.
So, like you said at the beginning, who do you believe? Do you believe Sonny and the five other detainees that were with her, or do you believe the tech? I mean, either way, they're both telling you the same story. So, I don't know if at that point you can say that if one person is lying. This is insane.
It is insane, and it doesn't seem possible that if, like, I don't know how the tracking works on the phone. I don't have anybody tracking, but Debbie does it with Molly all the time. Molly asked Debbie to put it on her phone, so I know it's really accurate. No matter where you are, it is accurate. So unless there were multiple mishaps and technological glitches that night, it doesn't seem like there would be that much. And then they just got a call that she was at a gas station.
They just left her there. Somebody come pick her up. It's fine.
Yeah. So how'd she get there? How'd she end up at a gas station?
Especially when she was never booked, according to the Dodge County Sheriff.
Yeah, no record. No record at all.
Weird.
Yeah. More to come after this. It's Daybreak on the Civic Media Network.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
6:35 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. If you are in Wausau listening on WXCO or in Richland Center on WRCE or even Hayward on WBZH, we are certainly glad that you are joining us this morning. And remember, Brian, you can always get our free app if you don't want to listen over the air. You want to take us wherever you go. You can get it just by downloading it at your Apple Store, your Google Store, totally free. You can listen to all of our great talk programming as well as all of our music stations. And we have to make sure, we would be remiss this morning if we did not mention that we are on Facebook now.
And Instagram. Don't forget that.
That's right.
That's where all the cool kids are.
That's
by cool kids,
told.
I mean middle-aged men and women who are trying to be cool and they don't understand TikTok. So, yes, we're on all of those. And listen, since we're doing some shameless plugs, let's tell everybody that they want to start listening. Well, they want to start listening
like now.
Right now.
Yes.
But on Monday, we are launching a multi-state contest. It's a text to win contest, and we'll give you more details as it gets closer. But to play, you're going to need the app.
Yes.
So as Jamie said, download that app now, and you'll get more details. But Monday, a big multi-state, that means more than one state.
Yes.
Just for all the legalese, I'm going to explain it in plain English. lots of people are going to be entering this contest. They might not all live in Wisconsin, but you will have a chance to win if you have the app.
Yes.
And then we will explain all the rules as we get closer.
Like, I don't want to give too much away, but we're talking maybe cash and like a really great grand prize. So
there's a grand prize.
Yes, daily cash prizes and a really big grand prize. So be listening on Monday for your chance to play along, text and win, and have your app all fired up and ready to go.
All right. Now let's get to work. Because if you had a child, or if you are a person who is paying off your student loans, during the Biden administration, you got some pretty good news because the SAVE Act, and not the election one that they're trying to push through now. This was the Saving on a Valuable Education plan. The Biden administration put it in, and it was going to lower the monthly bills to millions of student loan borrowers. It was supposedly one of the most affordable repayment plans ever created. Well, guess what? They're taking that away.
We can't have nice things in this world.
No, we can't. So a federal judge has decided that we are done with this, and it is going to affect, well, millions of people.
Over 7 million people. Yeah. This is interesting because this was through the U.S. Court of Appeals, and it was through the Eighth Circuit. They actually reversed a lower court's dismissal of a Republican-led legal challenge against SAVE. And the Biden administration, if you remember, this was actually one of those really awesome plans that the Biden administration launched and rolled out for people to help people basically keep costs in control and to be able to go get a higher education and, you know, achieve all of the things that maybe they've always wanted to achieve at no matter what age. And they rolled this out in 2023. It was billed as the most affordable repayment plan ever created. And under that program, a lot of borrowers expected to see their monthly payments essentially cut in half. But then, of course,
for the critics, I'm sorry. Let me just clarify. You were still paying back.
Just
couldn't. Your loan amount could not bypass 100% of what you owe.
Right.
And you know, if you're making student loan payments, it's mostly fees and interest.
Yes.
And even if you get it deferred, you're still paying that interest.
Right.
So this was just to basically cut back on the interest payments. You were still paying back your principal. So for all the people, and listen, I assume that there are Republicans with student loan debt.
I'm just going to assume it.
Don't know for a fact. But that's been the big argument. Why should we forgive any sort of debt? I didn't go to college. I didn't do this. Well, you weren't forgiving the initial debt. You were forgiving all the ancillary stuff that's why people are drowning. Even if they can make the principal payment, it's the other stuff.
And that
buries you.
And I knew actually a lot of people who took advantage of the SAVE plan with their student loans because of just what we're talking about, the interest that accrued over multiple years. Of course, as you can imagine, the Republicans didn't really like this plan because it made things more affordable for people is just my guess off the top of my head.
They looked at it like charity.
They did.
And they don't like charity.
We wouldn't want to help anybody and, you know, make the economy grow in any way, shape or form. But they obviously quickly put up barriers and filed multiple legal suits against this particular SAVE bill. We're going to call it the bill because I don't want it to get it confused with whatever the GOP are trying to do with the SAVE Act right now.
No.
But there were a lot of consumer advocates and borrowers that had hoped that last month's judgment meant the program would be temporarily revived. Now, if you want to know what happened, all you have to do is look at Donald Trump's big, beautiful bill, because that is what essentially phases out the SAVE plan as of July 1st, 2028. More than 7 million student loan borrowers are still enrolled in the SAVE plan as of right now, according to the U.S. Department of Education. And now those borrowers were placed in forbearance during these legal challenges, meaning they weren't making any of their monthly payments. So their loans have been sitting there accruing more interest since August, which is completely unfair. Ridiculous, especially when it was because of these lawsuits that are going to add on and tack on the fees for people who, you know, actually have to pay that money back now.
Yep. Yeah, these borrowers who believed in this plan are getting screwed and that's nothing new, really, when it comes to any sort of debt. We are all bogged down in interest rates and fees and everything else that goes with it. But to put your trust in it, and then through no fault of your own, it's not like they missed payments from August till now. They were trusting in a government program that had been assured them to, again, still pay back your loan. That's what we have to remember.
And I don't know if this would surprise you or not, but I did a little digging into how this plan actually worked.
Somehow I see spreadsheets. I see one of those green accountant visors.
Thank you. I don't get into numbers that much because math is hard for me, but I did do a little basic. And for anybody who's not familiar with how this worked, borrowers typically saved at least $1,000 a year, which comes out to about $83 a month. And so for a lot of people who were just graduating, just trying to get their feet back underneath of them after going to school, and were earning modest incomes, the savings were even bigger, about $102 a month compared to older repayment plans. And for some lower income borrowers, monthly payments were reduced to $0, because if you earned $32,800 a year or less, or a family of four making about $67,000 per year, you could qualify for zero monthly payments. Now, that plan also cuts student loan payments for undergrad loans in half, from about 10% to a discretionary income down to about 5%. And that made higher education debt, as you can imagine, a lot more attainable and manageable for millions of people across this country. Why do we not want people to be educated? That's my question.
Well, the answer is sad and simple. Educated people tend to think for themselves. Educated people have opinions. Educated people will speak out when they see something that is wrong, no matter where you are on the political spectrum or the social spectrum. If you see what you consider an injustice, educated people can speak out about it. Used to be with intelligent arguments, now it's just internet memes, but same kind of thing, because an intelligent citizenry is going to question your misinformation, and we don't want that here. And because I really remember it, and I'm going back to the first Trump campaign, when anybody with a intelligent thought was called an East Coast elite, and suddenly it became bad to be smart. Now, growing up, Jamie, you and I are old enough, and I don't know how it was, Parker, when you were coming up. Intelligence was admired. Like, the yes. smartest kids in school were like, man, that kid's really smart. And it wasn't said with disdain. It was kind of said with a hushed awe, because you couldn't believe it. I can still remember the names of some of the smartest kids I went to yes. school with, because they were brilliant. And I'm always amazed, because I think I'm fairly intelligent, but I'm nowhere near the smartest person around. And when I see the big brains on people, it's impressive. It doesn't threaten me.
Right.
But it seems to be intelligence threatens people. Brilliance has been downplayed, and it's easier to just go along and pretend we're just part of the uneducated masses. And I don't know where that tipping point came, but it seemed about a decade ago.
I mean, education used to be a portal out of so many different situations, right?
Right.
We used to put it on this pedestal that if we could get education, it could propel us into different parts of life. It could propel us into bigger things, no matter where you came from. And we have essentially downgraded that, because we don't want people smarter. And you also have to look at the fact that the GOP right now is okay with people not getting ahead, not being able to afford things, but yet at the same time saying, but we're not going to do anything to help you out. We want you to suffer, but we also don't want you to get better. So we just want you to live in this weird limbo where you're just stuck and you're reliant. And I don't understand when we went from wanting to achieve big things in this world to that being our mantra of how we wanted to move people forward and to keep them at a level of, in some cases, we're talking poverty type levels, where if they just had the education, if they just had the means, if they just had a way, they are smart enough, they are capable, that they could get themselves out of that. But we don't want that for them. And I think that's appalling. I think it's absolutely appalling that people are being forced into basically what certain parts of this government want them to be. And that's appalling, because nobody should be forced into that.
No. And I want to clarify something, because I know college is not for everybody.
Right.
And there's a lot of people with a lot of skills and a lot of brilliance that never went to college. And every time I see like a skilled tradesman, I'm in awe of them as much as I am somebody who came up with some sort of legal argument or a medical breakthrough. It's like, how do you know the intricacies of all of this?
And
it's
incredible.
Because they are everybody. Education doesn't always mean books.
No.
It can mean life. It can mean physical things. And so that was not my point, because you don't have to have gotten a degree to be educated.
No.
You know, and a lot of people can educate. They have natural intelligence. They have intelligence that is bolstered by other factors in life. And, but I just, you know, because that's also another argument.
It is.
everybody doesn't need to go to college.
No, they don't. Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. But it goes back to my same point. Why are we making everything harder for people? We've taken away their SNAP benefits for small business owners who are also equally as brilliant, maybe didn't go through the education path. We're making it harder to get health insurance to stay healthy. And it's all part of that same line of thinking that we don't want people to be better. We don't want them to be able to take care of themselves. But we are also not going to give you any programs because we think that you're lazy. What?
Right. Well, a lot of texts coming in. One from Mark. He says, why is it okay? It just jumped. Stop typing, Parker. Why is it okay to forgive business loans that went to guys like Robert Voss and then not be taxed on income? And Andrew, listening on WMDX, bailouts for corporations are okay. Loan forgiveness is bad. So, yes. And then Lynn from Golden Valley, didn't one of Trump's econ cabinet heads say he wanted lots of happy factory workers?
Yes.
Yes.
Lots of happy factory workers.
The factory workers used to make a lot of money.
6:48 right now. This is Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Want to join in on the conversation? Call or text 855-75-CIVIC. Now back to Brian and Jamie.
It's 6:52 right now. Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us today on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Glad you're with us. If you want to get involved in the program in any way, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. Text line is jumping this morning. We get to as many as we can. So thank you for that, and thank you for the comments that are coming on the social media streams. You can always watch us on Facebook and on YouTube. So if you want to see what we look like early in the morning, we're pictures of beauty. This is good news because I can't imagine the trauma for a woman who's been sexually assaulted. It goes beyond my comprehension, thankfully. I can empathize, but that's as far as I can go. But Wisconsin sexual assault survivors now have more time to seek justice after a new law signed by Governor Evers. The law doubles the statute of limitations for second-degree sexual assault cases from 10 years to 20 years. And you may think, well, that seems like a really long time. There's a myriad of reasons that women do not report things right away. And you can argue till the cows come home whether they should, if it really happened, but they should go report it right away. Keep your mouth shut unless you've been in that position. That's my only advice on this one. And it's good advice in a lot of things.
Yes.
But really good advice in this kind of situation.
Yeah, I mean, for some survivors, sometimes they're afraid. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they feel shame, even though the blame belongs entirely on the person who committed the crime. In some cases, they don't fully remember or understand the details of what happened to them for many years, and they have to piece it together because trauma's weird. And it kind of works that way sometimes.
Yeah.
So giving survivors more time to come forward isn't about punishing anyone unfairly. It's literally about recognizing the reality of trauma and how people heal. And this law also shows something that I think we need more of in this society, some empathy, because this is empathy for people who have experienced something deeply painful. It's also empathy for the fact that healing doesn't happen on a governmental timeline. Go figure, right?
Exactly.
Right? And advocates of this particular law say that the change is important because a lot of survivors do need those years before they feel ready to report that assault. And in some cases, investigators also need the extra time to collect evidence or use some of that newer technology at their fingertips, like advanced DNA testing, to help build some sort of case. Sometimes there's not a lot going into these cases, and they need some time to make that happen and make any sort of charges stick so those survivors do get the justice that they deserve.
So for those who are wondering the difference, second-degree sexual assault in Wisconsin is a felony. It can carry up to 40 years in prison. That can be if the victim is under 16, if the assault involves a threat of violence, or the victim is unconscious or incapacitated because of drugs or alcohol. So there are no statute of limitations on first-degree sexual assault. That involves the most serious circumstances. So this is, and I don't want to say, when I say just second degree, that doesn't minimize that assault. It's just saying this, that's what this law encompasses, second degree.
Now, this new law also includes protections for victims and witnesses who report sexual assault. So if someone reports an assault, they can't be charged with minor drug or alcohol violations that happened at the time of the incident. That's also sometimes, that's a good point, why survivors don't come forward. Because they're like, oh, I was out at a bar. I'd had a couple of drinks. Will anybody believe me? Did I do anything? I mean, it's a whole...
Using some sort of substance that is illegal, and I don't want to draw that in, and that's not an excuse for you to be attacked.
No,
it's
a whole process survivors and victims go through. Advocates say that this is an important stipulation, though, with the drug or the alcohol violation, because a lot of survivors won't report because they don't want to get in trouble, especially if they're underage. And so that also makes a big difference. Another part of this makes it easier for survivors to break their lease if they need to move because they feel unsafe in their current housing situation. Sometimes there's stalking incidents that take place with these crimes. And supporters say the changes are meant to remove barriers that essentially keep survivors coming forward and to give prosecutors more time to hold offenders accountable. Now, I think this
and
is...
10 years sounds like... 10 years does sound like a long time. But the biggest issue, and you said this, Jamie, and you're right, trauma is different for everyone. And breakthroughs or memories or... finally talking to somebody who convinces you that it wasn't your fault and you can move forward. That takes time, as well as the investigations. These are painstaking, unless there's video of somebody doing it, which, rare, I'm guessing. It takes time to do a proper investigation. So now 20 years, cases may never go that long, but it's good to have that buffer.
And I would venture to say that even if you don't know it, somewhere in your life, you have someone, most of us have someone who has been is a survivor or has been assaulted in some capacity. And so a law like this is not just good for the survivors. This is good for all of us, because when people who do commit these serious crimes know that there's more time for those crimes to be investigated and potentially prosecuted, it makes it harder for them to escape some sort of accountability. And sexual assault offenders are often repeat offenders. Giving law enforcement and prosecutors more time to build a case can actually stop patterns and also protect other people who might be victims down the road. And laws like this say something important about who we are as communities, too, right? If we're willing to listen to those survivors, then we understand that healing is something that takes time.
Well, it's good we're doing it on a state level, because we are not believing victims on the federal level.
No, we're not.
And international level, it seems better. But ladies, take this as a win, because you're taking a lot of losses between your health rights and your voting rights. And so good on Evers and good on the Assembly for passing this.
At least they came together on one thing. 6:59 right now. You're listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. When we come back, if you voted in 2020 in Milwaukee, the FBI may be getting access to your information. That should scare you. Talk about it more on the Civic Media.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.